Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues, concepts of sustainability, our relationships with the environment and impacts upon it. Joining me in his office in Boulder, Colorado, is Walt Meyer, senior research scientist with the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Walt, thanks for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you come on and talk about what's going on, this case up in the Arctic. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's start. You've been on the show a few times, but always like to reset things. Give us a little brief summary about what the National Snow and Ice Data Center does.
Yeah, so we're a center at the University of Colorado, and we're part of what's called the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences, or CERES. And basically, we study and collect data on all aspects of the cryosphere, which is the snow and ice covered regions of the Earth. One of our main things that we do, we are a NASA, it's called a Distributed Active Archive Center, basically a data center, and we archive all of the NASA satellite data as well as aircraft and other data of the cryospheric regions.
Okay, so that cryospheric regions include the two poles. Quick guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anywhere where there's snow, ice, or frozen ground, that we have data on that. So it includes the Arctic, Greenland, the sea ice floating in the ocean, mountain glaciers, and Antarctica, of course, too.
Okay. Well, let's turn our attention to the Arctic, because some interesting things going on up there.
Mm-hmm.
This past summer, they had a pretty warm. We could say a fairly warm summer up in the Arctic?
Yeah, it was definitely warm. We've seen a lot of warm summers over the recent years and, you know, last 15, 20 years. So it wasn't like the most extreme year, but it was definitely one of the warmer years that we've seen.
Okay, and one way that warmth expresses itself is in measuring the extent of sea ice as it melts and regrows year in and year out. And so this was also a fairly low year as far as the horizontal extent of sea ice.
Correct. Yeah, it ended up being we were tied for the second lowest extent, which we reach in September. As we go through the summer melt, it reaches its minimum in September. And this year we tied with 2007 and 2016 for the second lowest. Our lowest is still 2012. The last 13 years, the 2007 through 2019, those are the lowest 13 years in our satellite record. So we're really seeing a sustained decrease and a decreasing trend in the ice since our satellite records began in 1979.
Wow. So the last 13 years are the 13 lowest sea ice extent. Okay.
Yeah, the 13 lowest sea ice extents occurred in the last 13 years. So that's a pretty remarkable. It really, like I said, shows that we're seeing a changed Arctic.
Yeah, and now, how many years back does record keeping go?
So our modern satellite record, which is a continuous, consistent, we use the same types of instruments, we're, you know, really high confidence in the trends and so forth. That started in late 1978. We generally, you know, start things in 1979, but there are data that go back even back into the 1920s and 1930s from. Whether it be aircraft or ship records, it's not as complete, but we get a pretty good picture of the ice cover, even to some extent back in the 1800s, although, again, the farther you go back, the more scattered it gets.
Mm-hmm.
But we're pretty confident in saying that, you know, these last 13 years are lower than anything that we've seen in any of our records in terms of observations going back to the 1800s.
Right. Now, ice melts under two conditions, I guess. Air temperature can melt ice, but also water temperature. A warm water can melt ice. So you have ice melting from above and below, in effect. Does one dominate over another during the course of the summer?
Yeah, so it depends where you're at. Farther south, the air tends to be tends to start things. It's also the timing. It usually starts on the top. You get the sun coming up, the energy from the sun, the temperature's warm, and the surface starts to melt. And you get surface water and ponds forming, and those are darker than the ice. Mm-hmm. And so that even accelerates the warming because the darker surface absorbs more energy. But then as the ice goes away and gets replaced by the ocean is much darker. The ice is reflecting 60-70% of the sun's energy back to space. And so none of that goes into melting and warming the region. But the ocean absorbs over 90% of the sun's energy. So when you have the ocean there, any sunlight that comes in, and there's 24 hours of sunlight during much of the summer period in the Arctic, that's absorbing that energy. And that heat in the ocean, that raises the temperature above freezing, and that heat in the ocean, it washes up against the sides of the ice and underneath. And water is actually a much more effective heat. It has a bigger heat capacity. So it actually, even though the temperature of the water may only be a few degrees above freezing, that actually can melt a lot of ice. So, it depends where you're at and the conditions as to which one has a greater influence, but both play a big role. And this past year, and really in the last several years, we've seen the ocean heating up a lot, and that was one of the big stories this year, I think, was we saw really warm ocean temperatures, and that really can melt a lot of ice.
Right, and so what that does is thin the ice. And so the age of the ice, or I'll talk a little bit about that concept of ice age, so to speak, mm-hmm. and how that's changing too.
Sure. Yeah. So, in the wintertime or in the fall, the sun goes down, you start growing ice. And we call that first-year ice. It's ice that's grown just since the previous summer. And it grows and it thickens through the winter. And it gets to about 6 feet thick by the end of the winter and into the spring. And then it will start melting. Now, if it survives through the following summer, which it's tended to do, it will melt some on the surface, some underneath, but it will still, it won't melt away completely, or at least a lot of it. Once it survives that summer, then it becomes what we call multi-year ice. And then through the next winter, it gets thicker. So it gets thicker over time. So older ice is generally thicker ice. So the first-year ice, like I said, tops out is about 6 feet. That's the ice that's been growing the whole winter in pretty cold conditions. Some of it can be a lot thinner than that. But then as it gets older, if it gets 3, 4, or 5 years old, surviving 3 or 4 summers, then you get an ice that's more on the order of 10 to 12 feet thick or even thicker. So that becomes ice that's hard to melt. Even in an extreme summer, you get some surface melt, some bottom melt, and it will thin, but it won't go away completely. It does eventually drift out of the Arctic. The winds and the currents push it around and push it out of the Arctic, and it will melt. But what's had been the case is that you'd have this balance. You'd have this kind of drain where the ice would flow down along the coast of Greenland, but then it would be replenished. And so you'd have this older ice that would dominate most of the Arctic. Well over a third of the Arctic was ice that was at least 4 years old, and really ice that was what we'd call multi-year ice, survived a summer, was over 70% of the Arctic. And now that is reversed. Basically, we're seeing more and more of that thicker older ice. Once it's gone, it stays gone, and it's even melting within the Arctic because of the greater warmth. So now the ice cover is dominated by this seasonal first-year ice that only survives through one winter that's only like 6 feet thick. So our average thickness and our volume or mass of the sea ice has really dropped considerably over the last 4 decades. At least 50% we've lost in terms of the total volume.
50%, wow.
Yeah, and perhaps more.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Walt Meyer. He's a senior research scientist with the National Snow and Ice Data Center out of Boulder, Colorado. We're talking about Arctic sea ice, et cetera. I got a listener texting me a question wanting to know, this past summer, how close did open water get to the North Pole, and are you seeing a trend there?
That's a good question. I don't have a perfect, exact answer. The ice retreated up past, at least in some areas, up past about 80 degrees, which is within about 600 miles of the North Pole. Hmm. And so that's been fairly typical. We've had some years that came a little bit closer, got up to within about maybe 300 miles of the pole. That's about as close as we've gotten so far. One of the things that's an aspect of the Arctic is that the ice drifts around with the oceans and currents, and one of the main ways it tends to drift and tends to move is from the coast of Siberia across the Arctic, across the North Pole towards Greenland and Canada, and it piles up there. Hmm. When I talked about the thickness and talking about, 12 feet thick is about as thick as it gets, that's as thick as it gets in terms of just growing ice. But it can pile up and can pile up into thick piles that are several feet thicker than that, 20, 30 feet thick even. And that ice does really get pretty difficult to melt away. And the North Pole is kind of on the Greenland side. It's not right up against Greenland, but you always have ice kind of pushing across there. So we haven't quite approached the North Pole yet, I would say, in terms of closeness, and that's partly because there's always ice coming across there that's helping to keep the North Pole covered. But as things continue to warm, more heat in the ocean, we do expect that we'll see an ice-free North Pole at some point before too long, within the next couple decades probably.
Wow. But so we may still be around. You and I may still be around to see that.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think is really stunning about the change in the Arctic. 15 years ago even, we knew, the sea ice is going to respond. You raise temperatures, ice is going to melt. We knew that was going to happen. If you raise temperatures enough, it will, you will have an ice-free Arctic Ocean. There's evidence from, dinosaur fossils in the time of the dinosaurs and so forth that have been found up there that it was ice-free. So it certainly is possible. Of course, it was much warmer in those time periods. And so we knew it was coming, but the models and the kind of the general thought was this is something that's, going to be 2100 at the earliest and maybe later. So that's something that, maybe our grandchildren might live to see if they live a long life. But, now we're talking a couple decades where we're going to have the North Pole ice-free and maybe, most of the Arctic Ocean. And that's something, again, that, like you said, that we may be able to see. So that's a real dramatic change that we're going to go from a white Arctic Ocean to a blue Arctic Ocean within my lifetime and within maybe my career even.
That's an interesting thing you're bringing up, Walt, because, like you say, maybe back in the beginning of this century, we saw impacts coming, but like you say, they weren't going to occur. Temperatures weren't going to hit this level, or precipitation or ice-free Arctics weren't going to hit this level till the end of this century. And with each decade we've moved forward, we seem to be bringing that number, that event, like 1 to 2 decades forward as mm-hmm. we go forward. So, and we're not even talking about, obviously, the weather impacts that we'll have down here, because everything mm-hmm. gets reset. And Brian McInerney from the National Weather Service was on for the first half of the show, and I'm sure he could talk about that, look into that, how an ice-free Arctic would affect our summers here. And then, there's the biological impacts. That is a whole nother conversation, and the other ecosystems that would change as a result. So last few minutes, though, here we are, end of the year. Ice is regrowing there. How are we doing since we're near a record low back in the summer or September? How have things been regrowing there?
Well, it's been pretty slow, especially early on. In October, we had a period for at least a couple weeks where we, for that time of year, it was lower than it had ever been before in our records. It was a really slow beginning to the freeze-up season. And a lot of that had to do with the ocean heat. There was, like I said, the ocean temperatures were really warm, relatively speaking. We're talking, 7, 8, 9 degrees Fahrenheit, or 9 degrees above freezing Fahrenheit. In the 40, 45 degrees maybe at most, but it's just still cold. You're not swimming in that. But that's a lot of heat that all has to be dissipated and all has to be lost before you could grow ice. And so we saw the area like north of Alaska and off the northwest coast of Alaska, the Chukchi Sea, didn't completely freeze up until almost Christmas, just like a week or two ago. It finally closed up. And so it's been really slow. Now we've kind of recovered. Once the ice or once the ocean loses its heat, it can grow ice pretty quickly. So we're kind of back towards again low. We're not anywhere near normal at this time of year, but we're kind of back to where we typically have been for the last few years, last decade or so. But we did see, like I said, a really slow freeze up because there's more heat coming in during the summer, and it's taking longer to get rid of that heat before we can start growing ice.
Right. That whole feedback loop is in play.
Yeah.
And it has an ongoing. One last question from another listener who wants to know if, and this might be out of your area of expertise, but are you seeing changes in currents up there with temperature variations and gradations in seawater?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it is a little bit outside of my area of expertise, but I would say there's two aspects that I am somewhat familiar with. One is there is flow in from the Pacific Ocean through the Bering Strait. It's a pretty shallow, pretty narrow. There's not a whole lot that can go in there. But we have seen more inflow of warm waters, which helps to melt ice as well. And that's been helped, particularly the last couple years, because the Bering Sea has had very little ice through most of the winter, the last two winters. Usually most of the Bering Sea is covered by ice, and it's been mostly open water. So that's allowed more warm waters to come in. And those currents that bring in that warm water, are they kind of being pulled in by less ice and allowing more inflow? That's a possibility. In the other side of the Arctic, you have the remnants of the Gulf Stream. And there has been some concern that those they flow up towards the Arctic and then they sink, and so there's this warm layer underneath the Arctic in the Arctic Ocean underneath the ice, and it's kind of protected by colder, saltier water, colder, fresher water, and so it's lighter, and so it stays above that and kind of keeps that warmer water. It's still cold; it's just maybe a little bit above freezing, but there's been some concern that these currents could shift and you could have this warmer water lifting up. And then if it does, that's going to help melt more ice. Right now, you know, we haven't observed that directly, but there's been some observations of changes. And it's as far as what I know, you know, we don't know exactly what's going to happen in the future, but it is a concern because, like I said earlier, warmer water is a really it melts things much more quickly, melts ice much more quickly than the air temperatures. It facilitates the flow of heat much more easily. So changes in currents are definitely something that are something to watch for the future.
All right, got to wrap up. When do we reach extent maximum?
It's generally in March. And it can vary quite a bit depending on the weather, but usually on average about the middle of March, to basically the spring equinox time period. So grows through the night, and then as the sun comes up, it starts melting back.
All right. Well, that's when we'll have you on next to give
okay.
you the next
Happy
update.
Happy to join you again.
In the meantime, well, where can people go to learn all about the tracking of sea ice, both in the Arctic and the Antarctic?
Yeah, that's go to our website, which is nsidc.org. And like I said, we've got a lot of data there as well as a lot of useful information. We have our Arctic Sea Ice News and Analysis, which you can search for there or just look for a link that we have updated daily data, and we do monthly updates on the conditions. We'll have another update. It should be next week, kind of wrapping up the 2019 year in review and what happened over the summer. So check that out, and you can get all the information about the Arctic sea ice and other parts of the snow and ice-covered regions of the Earth there.
Walt Meyer, Senior Research Scientist for the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Thanks, as always, for joining us on This Green Earth, Walt.
All right, thank you. Nice
all right.
talking to you. Thanks.
Let's take a quick break.